Hello, I'm Susan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Susan.
Hello, you beautiful people. Happy Independence Day. Freedom from bondage of self. Woo! Yeah. So, my sobriety date is September 21st, 2009. Thank you. I'm very happy with that, too. I have a home group. It's a Lewisburg home group in West Virginia. West by God, West Virginia. Yeah, baby. Woo! West Virginia in the house. woo! Yes. So I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I'm pretty sure her sponsor has a sponsor. I have a sponsee, or actually a few sponsees, and I recently have a grand sponsee. So we have a very strong and active sponsorship lineage that is really lovely, lovely group of women to spend time with. I also really want to just take a moment to appreciate the honor that it is to be here and to be able to do something like this. I think I will be really happy and feel successful if I don't soil myself. A little nervous. So anyway, one of the best things for me about doing any kind of lead is that it really gives me an opportunity to take inventory about what I'm doing in my life with regard to this 12-step work. And what I really got to spend some time thinking about is gratitude in action. What is that? And how does it look in my life? And it seems to me that a good place to start in talking about that is how I got here. Prior to my joining with this lovely family and this fellowship, I did not have a problem with alcohol. I had a lifestyle. And it was a very active lifestyle, and it had a lot to go into that. There were, you know, I was very active with it, like I said, and there were a lot of people that I hung out with, and I really did a lot of, you know, it was a great time for a long time. And then as is happens with most of us, it became really damaging, and I damaged a lot of relationships and hurt a lot of people. I had a serious love affair with alcohol, and if anything got between me and my lover, they had to go. And that, therefore, a lot of people did have to go. Sadly, as does happen with a lot of us, that relationship just got too big. My relationship with alcohol got too big, and everything else got smaller, including my values, my love of life, my taking care of myself, and my relationships, of course. And therefore, as does happen to a lot of us, there were a lot of losses. And I precipitated that. I gave a lot of relationships away. So when I was 50 years old, I had a huge birthday bash. I actually rented a bar and filled it, and we had a great dance party and some really, really good times. And I recently looked at some of those pictures from my 50th birthday party, and I'm hugging people, and we are kissing each other and dancing and having this great connection. I don't even know most of those people. I don't even know who they are. It was a great party, though, so I'm told. So what ended up happening due to multiple experiences is that I ended up a few months later in a fetal position in my kitchen, and I just couldn't do this anymore, and I really, really was just sobbing from the depths of my soul. I'd had many moments of clarity, as we talk about, but something really was different that evening, you know, as I was curled up on my kitchen floor. I cried like I'd never cried before, and something deep, deep, deep down inside of me cried for help. And I'd never done anything like that before. And I remember my prayer. I mean, I prayed to something I had no concept of who I was even talking to, but I knew where I was speaking from, and I was asking for help. And my prayer was, I can't do this anymore, and I don't want this life anymore. I don't want to live anymore. And something inside of me said, no, I want this life only better. And my God, it happened. I mean, it's like, it's such a miracle. We talk about that all the time in here. So I was led to a treatment center, and I called the treatment center. And when I said, I really need help, what do I need to do? My question then became, what's next? What's next? What do you need? How do I need to do this? What's next? In treatment, whenever they said, you know, we read this book, I say, okay, what's next? We go to this meeting, okay, what's next? So I really developed a willingness to move into a different way of life. Something that I heard at one of the first meetings I went to was, you never have to feel this badly again. And boy, I heard that. I didn't ever want to feel that way again. So I really feel like I made this strong, deep internal commitment. What do I need to do to make my life, this life, only better? And it's been a quest. It's been a beautiful quest. I've met all of you new friends. How lucky am I? I had a roommate in this treatment center, and she would pray every night. And I remember looking across the room, and I could see the soles of her feet facing me, and her head bowed in such humbleness. It was beautiful. I didn't know how to do that, but I knew I needed to do something like that in order to really move forward into a new way of life. The best thing I could think of at that time, it was that when I would lay in bed, the first thing in the morning I would do would be plug in, and I would do this action with my hand, and that was my first prayer. And somehow that, I still do it. And it really does keep me very connected, and that it's like a good physical way of helping me do that. When I did return home, I had a lot of people bugging the hell out of me that I needed to get a sponsor. But as part of that, what's next, what's next, I was very willing to do that. And I got very, very fortunate and met a lovely woman who really is, she's thought of in our community as kind of a 12-step guru. And she is a lovely, lovely being. One of the things that I didn't like about her, though, is that she told me as we worked through the steps that I was a garden variety alcoholic. That hurt my feelings. I didn't like that. I thought it was really something special, you know. I had this lifestyle, but no. The gift of that, though, was that it really taught me that, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I am not a horrible, deranged human being with no soul. I have a disease, and there is a solution. And she taught me where to find that solution and ways to continually work on it. What's next? What's next? It's such a lovely journey. So as this occurred, I started really getting the sense that I have a responsibility. I had a responsibility to myself, to my higher power, to this wonderful fellowship. And within months of going to my home group, one of our members had a grievance about something, and I remember he spoke about that we're going to go to this thing called a group conscience and air this grievance. Well, power to the people, man. Let's go. You know, it was all about that. And so what happened as a result of that is that within, I think about a month, I was the secretary of our home group. And, you know, my attitude truly has been, you know, when somebody asks me to do something for AA, I not only do I say yes, I say, hell yeah, let's do this thing, you know? Man, I love this thing. It's paying it forward, paying it forward. So I really want, you know, what we get to experience in this. Okay, keeping an eye on time here. So In also thinking about this, I wanted to take some things from our literature that spoke to me about this topic. And I really found a lot in Bill's story. You know, I mean, we don't really see the word gratitude much in our literature. But one of the things that Bill says on page 15, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Isn't that beautiful? I just really take that to heart. After I became secretary of our home group, I had the opportunity to travel with a friend of mine to Founders Day, and I think I was maybe 9 months sober at the time. And to be in a large group of people celebrating recovery, I really felt like I had found my people. And the joy that I found there was something that really connected with some deep down joy inside of me that I think I'd never really nurtured before. And I swear I carry that with me now, and it's been years. And to be with you all and see you all dancing and doing the wave last night and listening to the speakers here at this lovely convention, it's just been, it just continually feeds that joy. I think that that's really part of something that it helps me stay connected, because it really is something that, I guess I won't say joy again, but that's what it is. I love, too, that Bill says that there is a vast amount of fun about it all. When I read that, I really smiled. I like having fun. I like having a good time. And I love having a good time sober. I didn't think that was possible. And I've just, you know, this gift is just, it just keeps on giving. And it is definitely something, you know, that when I work with sponsees, you know, that I get to pay it forward. And my sponsor reminds me of that all the time, you know. And we can pay homage and have gratitude to those that have come before us. As she says, whose shoulders we stand on. And hopefully we can transmit that to the new generations coming in so that this beautiful fellowship can continue. So fast forward to Bill's story. One of the things that he says there that I really love, each day my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself into a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill toward men. I definitely want to be a part of that. And so part of the way that I like to do that is I continue the plugging in. That's part of my gratitude in action. I utilize the prayers that we learn in the big book, third and seventh step prayers. I love the 11th step prayer, and I say that whenever I'm feeling a little impatient. It takes me a long time to say it, so it helps slow me down. I think, too, that if God is really deep down within us, as the big book says, or the fundamental idea of God, I have to take care of myself. So I dance a lot, and I try to dance every morning in celebration of just being sober, being healthy, being happy, being free, and being an alcoholic, which I never thought would make me smile when I would say that word. So, in closing, I would like to, I read a thing this morning, and it's a bit of a poem, I think. But what it says is, celebration is a high form of praise of gratitude to the Creator for the beauty of God's creation. To enjoy and celebrate the good does not mean that it will be taken from you. To celebrate is to delight in the gift, to show gratitude. So what I would like to ask you all is that if you were asked to talk about gratitude in action, what would you say? What would you share with others? And I would also like to thank you for letting me share.
This whole bunch has had me so busy, y'all didn't know who I am. I could have just snuck in. I'm Bob Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's by the grace of God and people like y'all in this recovery program, I'm here sober. My dry date's August the 5th, 1964. And what a topic. Gratitude in action. That's what you people are. A lot of difference between activity and action. How grateful am I when my phone rings 2:33 in the morning and that drunk's on that line? I am grateful. I'm grateful that, hell, I got enough money to pay the phone bill, that I have a listed telephone that people know how to get a hold of me. When one of them little darlings, I come from an area that we had winos and winettes when I got here. And then we had, you know, some kind of like me, if it was too thick to drink, we just chewed it. And, you know, I grew up with people. I've been in everything from a Mexican jail to a nut house. Didn't none of that stuff work. But the thing is that it was necessary for me in my life for some people to do some thinking for me. And they did. They put me somewhere that I didn't want to be. I shared with Susan a while ago. There went Clancy. I said, hell, we was in the same nut house, just a few years in between, not much. And, you know, that didn't do any good. But the thing is that the common denominator here is alcoholism, and the common denominator that we have in our life is recovery and Alcoholics Anonymous, 80 years. Congratulations. We got a boy coming up now that great expense we went to get him here. He's come all the way from California. It's bad for him out there, but he's here. Shelton, come up and share with us, buddy.
Hello, everybody. My name is Shelton Cheadle, and I am a garden variety alcoholic. Don't steal my line, Susan. I stole that from somebody else, and I really liked it because it reminds me I am not special. I am not unique. What I am is I'm an alcoholic. And if I don't put my butt in the chair, take the cotton out of my ears, stick it in my mouth, and act as if I know nothing, I might learn something. I've had some great teachers. Great teachers. The man who bought me my first big book when I went to my first meeting and I reached to the shelf trying to be on the sly. None of you have ever done that. Big books back then were $4.75. By the way, did I forget my sobriety date, Chad? Oh, I'm so sorry. March 6, 1986. It's just another day, that's all. Yes, and I'm 55 years old. Do the math. I've been sober over half my life. And that's a wonderful thing. But anyway, back to the big book. The man bought me the book. I asked him why. And he told me because someone else did that for me. I believe now, in retrospect, that was the beginning of my involvement in service work. When I first started doing service work, it was the old timers, as they called them then. I always called them youngsters. And they would say, you're going to clean those aluminum ashtrays. I was a smoker then too, by the way. You're going to make coffee. I didn't know a thing about that. And you're going to help clean up. And I knew I could do that. When I got to you lovely people, I didn't fit in. I didn't fit in anywhere. Nowhere. I was in a downward spiral. It was a black hole. And I was desperate. I told everybody for years after I was here, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get out of a relationship. I've cleaned that up since. That was a lie. I came here because I'm a drunk. And I needed help. And you all told me there was a way. And I believed you. I did believe you because I saw you laughing. I saw you talking about problems in your homes openly and honestly. And I said, I just might be wrong. Sometimes I came to meetings begrudgingly. So we'll cover that up real quick. Folks, don't work the program I used to work. It doesn't work. I got some friends in the audience tonight that know that story. I did two times in this program. I did two prison sentences. Two 10-year stints. No sponsor, no meetings, going to central office every year, get my chip, telling everybody I was sober. I was dry. Dry. Very dry. I heard it last night, saw it on the screen. Powder dry. That was me. We're going to really fast forward. I've done a lot of service work. They ask me anything, I say yes. I said yes to this event, and when I walked in and saw the chairs, I was terrified. The biggest I've ever talked to is maybe 120 people. That's it. Home groups, small meetings, sharing in a discussion meeting. That's it. See, I'm not a circuit speaker. I don't like that term anyway. What those people are is they're just invited more than I am. And I finally learned that. It's an honor. It's a privilege to be in Atlanta. I've never been in Atlanta. I've been here having a great time since I got here. We got here on Wednesday, and we've had a blast. We've had a few ups and downs. You know why? Because Sheldon got in the way. I'm grateful I got a program of Alcoholics Anonymous that teaches me that I can use the 10th step to fix the problems I create. Because that's what it is. I'm grateful to have great friends, personal friends. You're not supposed to point them out. There's two in that second row. There's a few back there. I called my sponsor. Actually, I texted him. That's a lie. I texted my sponsor right before I walked in the room. I said, help. He said, you're going to be just fine, man. I'm still scared. But I am fine. You know, I'm just here to tell you what has saved my life. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it gave me my life. And what it gives me is one opportunity to give back to others. It not only works in the rooms, it works here, it works at the local Waffle House, it works everywhere. That's what they talk about, applying the principles. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you I do it all the time because I don't. I just don't. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and it loves me back freely. I couldn't ask for more than that. You know, the most elevated position I'm ever going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous is sober. What else could you want? What else? There's one more thing I want, and it's starting to come to my life now. Because of the continued service work that I'm willing to offer, because I like doing it. It's like smoking crack smoking meth, drinking, whatever you're doing, it's the same feeling, but it's a better feeling. For me, it is. And that's service work. But it's brought me to a closer relationship to God. I sound like Jimmy Swagger sometimes when I get up here. Or Billy Graham, if you want to clean it up. Or Tammy Faye. I like throwing that one in too. But really, I do feel like that I have found a path to God that works for me. And it's through service work. I'm blessed. Absolutely blessed. You know, that is just me. You know, I want to thank somebody personally. I want to thank Miss Elizabeth. She's the office manager of Shreveport Bossier in Louisiana. And she is the one that asked me when I walked in on a Friday, doing my little bit of service work, picking up chips, doing whatever I was doing. And she says, "Sheldon, would you possibly like to be nominated?" And then I never heard nothing. I said, "Good, they got all the seats filled. I don't have to do it." I got this crazy phone call out of World Services. "Are you going to speak?" I didn't even think about it. Yes. Yes, I'll be there. Then I had to start scrambling and make the plans. I'm glad I did. This is my first international convention. My first. Yeah. You know, blessings, blessings, blessings. They come when you least expect them. At least for me, they did. I have a sponsor. I use my sponsor today. That's a different thing for me. I have sponsees. And we have a little family going on. And we don't have a clique, but we have a little family within our group. And I asked them one night, we're all doing activities after the meeting, and I said, "What do you want to call ourselves? A posse, a this, or that, or whatever?" It's our crew. And I love that. Because we range in age. We got 60-year-olds in our crew. We got 20-year-olds in our crew. We're like-minded individuals trying to do the same thing. Stay sober today. That's all. I can sit and talk all day with an individual who's willing to listen to my nonsense. Because that's what I think it is sometimes. I do want to quickly share because I don't know where I'm out of time. But I want to give the proper praise where it's deserved. My God, of my understanding. That's where it all goes. Everything else is a filter down from. But I want to thank the gentleman in my home group, and this has been a tough call this entire past week. I have two groups I love, but you have to pick one home group. And I was taught that in my first year of sobriety. My home group is called Faith. For all inmates, there's hope. Every Friday night, unless I'm in the hospital or have to be away, I go inside the Jackson Parish Correctional Center in Jonesboro, Louisiana. I get to carry the message in. The warden and the chaplain agreed to allow me to bring chocolate into the inmates. That is a great deal to me because I'm a chocoholic. And I thought about, what would I want? I get to do that. Folks, it takes me 2 hours and 10 minutes from my house to get there one way. And 2:10 back. I have narcolepsy. If you don't know what it is, I fall asleep at the wheel. Involuntarily. Some nights I have to pull off the road and sleep in my car. But it's okay. I still get to carry the message. Those men are with me here today. And I want to tell you about, and he wouldn't mind if I use his name, I want to tell you about Joe Hicks, because it's important to me. I got the call from the chaplain from Jackson Parish on Monday. Mr. Hicks had a brain bleed, had a stroke, and took us from us immediately. Mr. Hicks is one of the ones that got the first call call, Joe, we want to start a meeting in Jackson Parish. Can you help us? Joe was one of us. He's an alcoholic. He's also a Gideon. Joe carried the message very well. He taught me a lot in a very short time. You know, when he passed, it was devastating to me. Any death is devastating. But Joe, I thought I wouldn't be able to go to a viewing, a funeral, or anything. But God saw fit that I was able to go and see Joe one more time. And I did, right before we left to come to Atlanta, because it was a 10-hour drive for us. And I went to see Joe and got home about 9, was planning on leaving at 12, left at 4. Didn't get all crazy this time, but we left, and I got to say goodbye to Joe. But I'm going to bring Joe here tonight, because you all would love Joe. You know, he always nicknamed everybody. He called me his main man. Joe would call me on Fridays on my way to Jonesboro and say, Sheldon, what are you doing? I say, Joe, you know what I'm doing. I'm driving 100 miles an hour because I'm 3 hours behind to get to Jonesboro on time because I got to be there at 7 o'clock to carry the message. Because people understand this. In the correction system, you're at their mercy. Whatever they say goes. And that angers me. Because I think Alcoholics Anonymous should be available to you if you want it, not if you need it. Anyways, he would turn around and say, well, Brother Sheldon, if you're going, I think I'm going to stay home tonight, take Mama out. Today I realized he wasn't taking Mama out. Joe didn't feel well. Joe, I love you. I thank each and every one of you for allowing me to tell you that story, because hopefully it lets some peace into my heart. I am an emotional person today due to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can cry at the drop of a hat, and it's real. I get the honor and the privilege of standing in front of you. I don't care if I've got the time I've got. It's who crawled out of bed first today. And I guarantee you, in my room, it wasn't me. We took turns this week. Who's going to crawl out of bed first? I don't know how that worked. How am I doing on time, Bob?
You're good.
I'm good?
Yes.
I want to read something out of one of my favorite books. I can't remember the book I used to read out when I first got sober, but it was from Hazelden. There was a lot of controversy early on, because as I said, I got sober in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio, matter of fact, at the Crossroads Club at Shawn Acres. And I'll tell you about that in 1 second, because that's another important piece. But I want to read this, because I think this is real important for me anyway. It is. I was looking for something cute, fancy, or whatever you want to say, catchy, to come here with to impress you people. I don't have to impress you. I just have to be me. But from the Daily Reflections for July the 4th, I'm not going to read the top half. It's not important enough to me. I have seen the workings of the unseen God in AA rooms around the country. Miracles of recovery are everywhere in evidence. I now believe that God is in these rooms and in my heart. Today, faith is as natural to me, a former agnostic, as breathing, eating, and sleeping. The 12 steps have helped to change my life in many ways, but none is more effective than the acquisition of a higher power. I heard that multiple times in rooms, and I ignored you people. I wish I had not, but the journey goes as it goes. Everything happens for a reason. Everything has a time. And I believe Well, also this weekend I got blessed because when I was standing at the dance with my friend back there and watching all you lovely people enjoy yourselves, and I was too, I realized when I first looked at this room that night, dances over there, that was the 21st anniversary of my father's passing. Thank you, Dad. Thank you for allowing me to be here too. You know, I can stand before you and tell you, I'm an alcoholic and I have found some peace through this program. God bless y'all and thank you so much.
Sheldon, thank you. It's good to see AA alive and well, to see people doing the action in all areas of this thing called life, for us to find an acceptable way to go wherever we are, to survive whatever circumstances comes down our road. Had a wife die when she was back in 1985, and she was 44 years old. I didn't really think that was fair. I had to dig a little deeper into Alcoholics Anonymous to find an answer. And then talking to a sponsor and applying some program, was I grateful that I had the lady in my life? Did I live that way? Did I act that way? That was what his suggestion was. And these things are circumstances, and I stayed single for another 3 years, and I found a lady that's still in my life today. We've been married a little over 26 years, and I've been in training for at least that long. And I didn't intentionally fib. A lot of people call it lies. We use softer terms around our home. If I'm wrong, I don't say it's wrong. I just say it's an error. Sounds better to me. And these old cronies that I'd have in Oklahoma and Dallas and Fort Worth, and they said, "Bob, your wife's a little younger than you." I said, "Well, there's several ways you can look at that. I'm a little older or she's a little younger." But anyway, I said, "Yeah, when you marry someone a little younger, well, you know, she's in training." Probably about a year later, I'm talking to some of these old cronies again, and I shared with them that it seemed that I misled them. I know who's in training, and it's me. And I still am. I'm blessed that we have a sober home, that she's a lady that was sober when I married her, and I'm not her sponsor, and I promise you she's not mine. And she works with others, goes to meetings. And me as a sober AA, I can have gratitude in action in our home. We seem to be the same at home, at work, at play, and in AA. And it's real good to see these things, to be aware of them. The next lady is down here from Canada. We've been up there a few times in Toronto, and Nana's here, and she's going to get up and share with us, young lady.
Wow, what a blessing to be here. See, until the last very minute, I wasn't sure that I will be coming to this conference. The reason is I'm just coming out of very lengthy and extensive cancer treatment. And by the grace of God, I'm here. For that, I'm grateful. I'm grateful. See, until the very last minute, when I wasn't sure going through the treatment, I mentioned to my friend Asim, I said, I think to do a decent thing, I should decline my invite to speak because I don't think I'll be able to make it. And he's here. He said, no, you're not declining. You are going. Thanks, Asim, for giving me that hope. I am an alcoholic. My name is Nina. I'm grateful that today I'm a sober alcoholic and not a drunk alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 26, 2010. I'm from Toronto, Canada. My group is Saturday Morning Group. Saturday Morning Discussion Group, that's the full name. I am an alcoholic because when it comes to alcoholic drinks, there is one too many and 1,000 are not enough. I know, today I know and fully understand that I cannot consume alcohol in any shape, form or quantity. Even a little drop of alcohol will trigger a craving for countless drink. I know it today. I did not know it then. Then my usual day would start with a very sick thinking, looking at my life, finding faults with my life, complaining about my life, blaming others for my problems, being miserable, drowning in self-pity, listening to the sad and old, drunk Bollywood songs, and then drowning myself with drinks. Waking up with hangover, guilt, shame, remorse, promising myself and my family that I will not drink again. And then, very soon, I would bury that feeling of shame and guilt somewhere down inside, forgetting all those promises that I made just few minutes or hours earlier, coming up with long list of justification as to why I should drink, telling myself I will have only two drinks and then stop every time. And then I get drunk again. I was trapped in this painful, vicious cycle for 25 long years. I was a prisoner of bottle. I could not see outside the bottle. Giving grief to myself and my family. Kept repeating that vicious cycle. See, back then, when I was drinking, when someone at the table, they suggested after a drink or two, okay, like social drinker, they'll say, okay, we are leaving, we are going home. And I would have a resentment against them. Why? The party has just started, and why do you have to leave? And all of those things, and the world will not come to an end if you don't go to your family for dinner just one day and all. Because, my friends, when I started drinking, I forgot that my husband and little girl, they were waiting home for me, worrying about me, being in downtown, late hours, coming home in public transport. They were sitting, worrying about me. When I started drinking, nothing mattered. I didn't care. Only thing mattered for me is that I continue to drink. I forgot about everything else. People who drank like me, they became my best friends. And my best friends and well-wishers who suggested that I'm drinking too much, they were out of my friends list. I didn't want to do anything with them. I would give all these reasons to them that, oh, I do not have a drinking problem. I have a job. I'm paying for my own drinks. I'm not asking you to pay. I have a place, my own place to live. Alcoholics don't go to work. All of that sick thinking, all of that. I didn't want to go to any social gathering where there was no alcohol because I didn't want to, waste my precious time, my weekend, to go places where, my whole, everything just revolved around drinking. It was just so sick, so sick. I was born in India in a traditional Indian family where drinking was considered a taboo, especially women drinking alcohol. They were not accepted, not tolerated. My mother did not drink, my grandmothers did not drink, my aunts did not drink, my neighbors did not drink. And yet, alcoholism found me because alcoholism has no discrimination. I had a normal, loving childhood, but all I can remember always that I was full of some unknown fears all the time. I was anxious, I was worried about things, and when I wasn't worried, I would worry that why I'm not worried about anything. I was just crazy, I was just never at ease. I was depressed, I had a very low self-esteem, I thought everybody else is better than me, they're more loved than me, they have all of that. That worry, the feeling of unease and worry and depression was always with me. I got married at very early age and I left India. I came to join my husband. I moved to Abu Dhabi, UAE, and most of you people will know this place as Dubai. Now, this is where I had my first drink. I started working for American Oil Company, and there was drinks and parties and all of that, and when I drank, I just loved the effect of it. All of those worries and everything just, wow, it was a magic. I found a solution to all my worries and fears and problems, and I just loved it. I loved that experience, and I just wanted to have that feeling all the time. So I would go to the parties. If there was no party, I would organize some parties because I wanted to drink. I started avoiding my Indian friends, and because my Indian friends, they did not drink, or if they drank, they drank like ladies, like one glass of wine all night and all. So I started moving with my Canadian and American friends because drinking was socially accepted with them. So that's how it was. And in 1988, I moved to Canada. Wow, was I happy. Like, I was so happy, like a kid in a candy store. There were bars everywhere there. I could just go to liquor anytime, buy liquor, come out, nobody to answer to. I was far away from home. Nobody can see how much I'm drinking. I just loved it. And this is where, in Canada, my drinking started progressing. As my drinking was progressing, the problems, there was no peace in my, there's so much unpleasantness in my home. I was so much, that vicious cycle of promises, not drinking, that I explained earlier, it kept repeating, and there's no peace in the house. Now my daughter, she's growing up, and she's so angry at my drinking, and it is just, it was just not a good atmosphere in the house. And thank God for international convention, because my story is somewhere very, very connected to the 75th international convention that happened in Texas. My brother, who's also in the fellowship, he had come to attend the Texas convention, last one, and on his way he stopped in Toronto. Now, when he saw all this in my house, he looked at me, I don't know what, he never said to me, Nina, you are alcoholic. He didn't say you have a drinking problem. He didn't say, Nina, you should think about your drinking. And what he did, he said, he brought some pamphlets, A pamphlets and big book and all that. And you know what he did? He said, well, my bags are full. I'm leaving this. I'll come and take it next time. And he said, I'm just leaving it here. Wow. And, okay, you can do that. And, you know, I just put it in my bedroom, in the corner, all of that stuff. And when in December 2010, when I hit my emotional bottom, I was at the lowest, darkest, loneliest, deepest dark point. I was crying in my bedroom, crying that I can't go like this. Whenever I will see the disappointment in my daughter's and my husband's face, I was crying and praying. God help me. I want to stop drinking, but I don't know how to live without drinking. When I'm crying, I looked at all that material my brother left there. And I'm reading that. I picked up the big book. When I started reading there, and I identified that not only I am an alcoholic, but I'm the worst kind of alcoholic. And I called AA at that moment. They informed me of the meeting that was happening there. I went there to my first meeting. I was crying. I was shaking. I was just so confused as how I will go on living without no alcohol. I just might shoot myself. I can't live without no drinking. However, I still went. I picked up my desire chip. And that day, when I picked up my desire chip, after that, after the meeting, my journey started. Brenda, my sponsor, she's here. She was there that night. She held my hand, and she's here with me even today holding my hand through all that. All the people, she opened her door every Sunday. She works very hard, but every Sunday she opened her door, fed us. We went through the big books and all. And in this program, many people came and helped me. And thank God for old-timers. When I came to the doors, old-timer Bob, he loved me. He was there all the time helping me. And one day, I used to come to the meetings and in the service, I was setting up the room. And he came, it was before the meeting. All he had to say, Nina, how are you? And I just snapped at him. What? I don't know, Bob. I don't think this is for me. The world is driving me to drink. And he said, Nina, sit down here. He said, promise me. He held my head. Promise me you'll stay. Keep coming back. And I promise you, you will see the world does not drive us to drink. And no situation, circumstances, place drive us to drink. We drive ourselves to drink. And sadly, after having that talk, we lost him. He passed away 1 month after that, and he did not see my growth in this program. I remember him. I will never be able to forget him. My journey is a continuous journey. I don't think I gave my sobriety date. It is December 26, 2010. Sorry if I forgot. My journey from there, the service brought my journey to the whole new level. My very first group, I was there for almost four years. It has only three to four members. Correct, Brenda? Three at any given time. So by default, for I was the one who was setting up and making coffee for 3.5 years, and they meet Friday night. It saved my life because every Friday I used to run to the liquor store or bars. Now I started running to start the coffee and set up the meeting. That group saved my life. And now I'm at the district table in the last 2 years serving as a secretary. The service became a fundamental requirement. I do believe is for my experience that I would have not been here if service was not part of my recovery, my journey. In my sobriety, there are many challenges came in my personal and professional life. Many, many challenges. And coming out of those challenges, what I have experienced is as long as I stick to the best of my ability, I stick to the principles of the programs, I will be all right. No matter what the problem is, solution is in the big book. For me, emotional sobriety is for me is just so important because I know if I continue to slip on my emotional sobriety, I will pick up a drink. Each morning I start my day with identifying my shortcoming and I pray to my God, just remove those shortcomings just for today. Every shortcoming that I see, and at the end of the day, I look how I behave, what was my attitude, and if things do not go the way they should be, I do not beat myself, keeping in mind progress, not perfection. I be mindful to do that better next time. Recently, I'm grateful today that Nina, who used to start her day with complaints and being miserable, today I start my day with gratitude. Recently, when I was told that I have cancer, the very first thing somehow I said, thank God that the symptom appeared so I know I have this disease. Thank God that I'm in Canada, a country with one of the best medical system, and that too is free. Thank God that I'm retired, so I don't have to worry about missing the work. Thank God that my husband of 36 years is with me to help me through this phase. And then I say, wait a minute, I have just been told that I have cancer, and all I have said is thanks. This is not the Nina I recognize. This is not me. How did this change happen? When did this change happen? And my friends, the only answer I have to that is that transformation within me is the result of my recovery through the 12-step recovery program. I'm grateful that today I have faith instead of constant worries, fear, anxiety, and depression that I always had. I'm free from the bondage to compulsion and the obsession to drink. And I'm truly thankful and truly happy, joyous, and free. Now, all of these wonderful gifts that I have received in my recovery by the blessing of my God, through this program, help of my sponsor, and I truly believe that I can keep these gifts and continue to receive gifts only if I give back, and not only to the fellow alcoholics, but to mankind, whenever, wherever I can help. I pray to my higher power, make me useful. Make me useful, my higher power. Recently, when I was going through my cancer treatment, I was just, when I saw the number of people who can use the help, and recently Canadian Cancer Centers announced that in another 10 years, the growth of cancer diagnosis will be up by 40%. And immediately, without even thinking anything, I put my name forward in whatever way I can help by sharing my experience. So it's not necessary giving back is within fellowship, but wherever, whenever I'm needed, I ask God to bring me there and help me to be useful. And with that, I would like to thank the committee for giving me chance, inviting me here to speak. I'm both grateful and humble. Thank you all. Thank you.